This dev room is also themed around the work of Professor Dijkstra. Dijkstra was a computer scientist. He was one of the inventors of the field, you could say, programming from the years of 55 until he passed away about 20 years ago. His influence has been very large. He has introduced concepts, or at least the terminology, like the stack. He invented the semaphore, and he also quickly discovered the associated deadlock. His work has been much on composition, determinism, and formalism. He's also a very quotable character. So one quote I have here: present-day computers are amazing pieces of equipment, but most amazing of all are the uncertain grounds on account of which we attach any validity to their output. It starts already with our belief that the hardware functions properly. Dijkstra was most famously known for his paper titled "The Go-To Statement Considered Harmful," a paper he wrote in 1968. For a number of years, I've been familiar with the observation that the quality of programmers is a decreasing function of the density of go-to statements in the programs they produce. And the idea is that a program should be made as trivial as possible to be able to assert its correctness. And with go-tos, you jump around in the code and you create a spaghetti code, as we call it. And it becomes very hard to digest the linear path through the program. And with all the variations of paths, it's also impossible to predict whether it's correct or not. Go-to is not the only statement that is harmful. In today's environment, I tend to point out that self in Python is a code smell. The use of self in Python I consider harmful. And in a way, self reflects something that is related to the go-to issue. Object-oriented programming lends itself to spaghetti balls of dependencies between objects. And Dijkstra himself was never a fan of OOP, so even in the 90s he was complaining bitterly for similar reasons. You lose the linear, simple view of the path. So even though Java does not have go-to proper, I still consider teaching Java to students a crime, because it encourages the OOP paradigm. And I'm slightly paraphrasing Dijkstra here again. In today's code, using exceptions can be considered harmful. And the reason is that when you throw an exception, it gets caught somewhere else in the code. And if you have enough of these, it becomes spaghetti code, and it becomes really hard to reason about the flow of the program. So exceptions are a form of go-to. What is the alternative? Well, one alternative is to use the maybe monad, as it exists in Haskell, for example, and Rust. And the idea is that when a function gets called on return, it has an error status or a non-error status, and you do something with the error immediately. So it becomes very clear where this is handled. You can circumvent it, you don't have to abide by these rules, but in general it leads to clearer code. There's actually a blog about this from last year, where they're talking about imprecise exceptions, which denote programming errors you have to handle, or panics. And these are situations that are not supposed to occur. And so exceptions still have a role, but in general they should be avoided. The Rust is an interesting language. You could say it's fairly recent, and its true aim is to build more correct systems. And it does not have a go-to statement. It doesn't have object-oriented programming. It defaults to a maybe monad for handling errors. And then it does type inference to help the programmer work with correctly with types. So all these things together aid the programmer in writing more correct systems. JavaScript callbacks I consider harmful. It's also known in colloquialism as callback hell. And the problem with callbacks is that you lose the linear path and you lose the grasp of the code you're writing. As Dijkstra said, humans have a small brain and a program needs to fit in the brain. And you know, very smart people may be able to fit a large program in their brain, but even when you do that, a couple of years later, you go back and you revisit the code and you say, why the hell did I write that? What actually does this code do? Solutions can be found in application of coroutines, promises, and futures, which are fairly recent additions to the web programming environment. And it makes the code more linear and easy to grasp. So to go back to Dijkstra, the actual title that he submitted for his paper to the journal was A Case Against the Go-To Statement. The title was changed by the editor of the paper, which happened to be a certain Niklaus Wirth. Later, Dijkstra much objected against the use of Dijkstra considered harmful, which in a way is a case of recursion. And so I went out of line with these three examples. Let's have another quote to distract you. Machines are so fast and stores are so big that they give us plenty of latitude to screw things up big time. This was in 1990. And he added, the dissemination of error-loaded software is frightening. And that's very much true today. Let's talk a little bit about provable correctness. The idea is that, and many experienced programmers will agree with this, is you have to make problems into the smallest possible components that are provably correct. And how do you prove a program is correct and deterministic? Well, the question is really a question of mathematics. And one thing Dijkstra did is bring in mathematics into computer science, or vice versa. We have to write software in a way that we can reason about it. And you should also watch the logic programming talk by William Will Byrd. Programs should be correctly composed, not debugged into correctness. And how the world differs today. So let's take the World Wide Web as a case study. What is good about the World Wide Web? We have standards and protocols. Is TCP/IP a perfect protocol? No, it's not. As anyone can tell you who has tried to attach his laptop to Wi-Fi in a conference with 1,000 other people. This is due to an escalation problem in TCP/IP, which cannot even be solved in 2021. Are pieces of code on the World Wide Web modular? In a way, they are. The web is designed to be distributed, so we have independent pieces of services that can run independent of each other. And then we have the older distributed services, such as email. And lately, we are getting more and more new distributed services which do not want to rely on a central server or service, such as Mastodon. And Dijkstra would probably approve of this overall setup. So what is not so good? Browsers have different implementations and are not aligned. We use a flaky transport called JSON. We have centralized services for email these days, for messaging, and big tech plays a role in there. And people use that for convenience, but it should really be discouraged. And even microservices are questionable because they raise dependencies between the collection of services. So if you want to design a system like that, you have to do it really, really well. So each of these Dijkstra would probably have disapproved of. So Dijkstra had a take on this. Our true concern is with really large programs. If the chance of correctness of an individual component equals P, the chance of correctness of the whole program, composed of n components, is something like P to the power of n. P should be very, very close to 1 if we desire P to differ significantly from 0, because n will be large. And these are the interaction between the components. And if you read these notes from Dijkstra, which is written in, 1969, before the computer epoch, which is in 1970, they're worth reading and they're decidedly modern. Dijkstra had been writing software for almost 20 years, and mostly on computers that didn't exist at the time. Yeah, so he was writing it on paper or in his head. But he did build ALGOL 60, one of the first implementations, on a real computer, and this computer only had 4,000 words. Imagine writing a computer compiler, a software compiler, with only words, probably without a terminal. So Dijkstra emphasized that with our little brains, we don't have much, we have an inability to do much. And it would be very nice if I could illustrate the various techniques with small demonstration programs and could conclude with, and when we face the program 1,000 times as large, you compose it in the same way, and it's reliable. It's crucial to think of independent building blocks, the smallest building blocks possible. And one success story, as we know it, is of course the Unix model of independent tools, which can be composed using pipe operators, for example. They can run in parallel. And it is a really robust it's a really robust underlying system which we enjoy every day. So what to think of system D? I mean, one of my criticism of system D is that it's not really done in the Unix way. So if system D fails somewhere, what impact does it have on your system? What impact does it have on your infrastructure? These are open questions, and there are alternatives, including the GNU Shepherd. Talking about GNU projects, I would also quickly like to touch on GNU Geeks, which is a software package manager done right. Today it is over 15,000 software packages. I think it includes almost anything we consider relevant. It has special outputs for libraries, binaries, but also, for example, for versions that run on GTK2 or GTK3. GNU Geeks is really good at handling the dependency graph. And you can run different versions of libraries, even of glibc, against your compiled programs. So GNU Geeks is a rather robust and well-designed system. And we're now adding 100,000 lines of code per year. So how do you create a system of over 600,000 lines of code that is robust and correct? We'll focus on independent entities, make it composable, have assertions for correctness, strive for determinism, strive for reproducibility. And many of these ideas are a consequence of Dijkstra's work. There was a discussion on the mailing list recently where someone asked what the word derivation meant, because he wanted to translate it into Tamil. And if you read Dijkstra's work, which, by the way, I've been doing the last week in preparation of this presentation, and it has been a real privilege. But he uses the word derivation and logic programming, and there's no doubt in my mind that it is the origin of the word that is now in GNU Geeks. Dijkstra said, it starts already with our belief that the hardware functions properly. Of course, hardware has gotten more reliable. But Linus Torvalds only a few, 2 weeks ago ranted about the lack of error correction in consumer RAM. And a large-scale study by Google found that roughly 30% of their servers experience one memory error per year. If that's a critical, it doesn't sound like much, but if it's driving your airliner, you may not be happy about the result. Hardware, software too, you know, and 12 billion transistors in the latest ARM M1. You wonder whether you can trust that. One reason we're enthusiastic about RISC-V is that we have an open source style, open hardware platform. RISC-V will be very important in the coming years for trust and reliability. Microkernels are of interest too. Does anyone here want to have Linux flying their airliner? How do you make sure a program or a piece of hardware produces the correct results? The space shuttle program is an interesting example. Its design started in 1973. And what they did is they put five computers on board. Four of these needed to agree. And one was a reserve computer. So the crew could decide to disable the other four in case of an emergency. The interesting aspect was that it failed very quickly. These four computers did not agree with each other. And the reason is that they were not synchronized on the inputs. So the factors that came in from the environment led the computers to give different results. And what they had to do, they solved it by synchronizing these computers multiple times a second. One thing of note is that these were old computers in today's terms. They only had 4 kilobytes of RAM, for example. It is amazing that they lasted the full space shuttle program. To wrap up this presentation, some final Dijkstra gems. Testing shows the presence, not the absence of bugs. Well, this makes us think hard about these testing frameworks with thousands and thousands of tests. They don't predict bugs. You need to get your software right in the first place. And Dijkstra said, you know, for 10 years from now, if I look over your shoulder, if you think Dijkstra would have not liked this, you probably have to think again. And then the Dijkstra archive, all these quotes and all this work you can find at the University of Texas online, including, and there are also talks of, you know, that are viewable on YouTube. So to conclude, as a co-organizer of the DevRoom, I want to emphasize some of the talks. You should watch all of them, really. But particular mentions will be Ludo on declarative GNU Geeks, Christopher Baines on minimalism in GNU Geeks, Christopher Weber on Sprightly, the Federated Social Web, and I touched on Mastodon earlier. Will Burt on Mini-Canron, a declarative language for relational programming, and in a way it's his life's work. And Janneke on the reduced bootstrap, which is also extremely important. All talks are worth watching. I really hope you'll enjoy them and hope to see you next year in better circumstances live at FOSDEM in Brussels. Thank you very much.